I find him so retiring in my conversations, but I'm told there's this other side of his personality, and of course, Commissioner Fritz and all of us. And the nice thing about today is we are all united in supporting this. This is a great idea, and I am pleased that Linda raised this question of equity, and as we work with the mayor, we will find an equitable way for all of the city bureaus and entities to support the good work, because we are saying today that your festival is different. It isn't just another festival we host in Waterfront Park or somewhere else. It is the city's official festival. And finally, I just want to acknowledge that while it was not an easy path when this idea first came up, I was very pleased to support Randy when he proposed that we take the McCall building, which then was a derelict building, which was in very bad condition, and convert it to the future home of the Rose Festival. And, you know, it looks like a brilliant idea today as we celebrate it, but I remember back when we were debating it, and there were a lot of people who did not think it was such a great idea, and we heard from them. I think it is the right idea, and I'm pleased that there's a neon rose adjacent to it that signals and heralds your place and our premier park. So I want to thank the mayor and my colleagues for their leadership on this, and particularly Randy for driving the train, and I am very pleased to add my voice in support. I vote aye.
Leonard?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I do have strong beliefs, and they're based on my own experiences in life growing up here in Portland, and one of them, frankly, is being a young child growing up not far from where Governor Attia grew up on 8th and Siskiyou, and walking to the parade in the morning to participate in that Portland tradition of the kids throughout Portland did back in the 50s and the 60s, and that is first won, first served. And as you know, I worked very hard to make sure that tradition stuck. And I also believed as strongly that the Rose Festival, after being appointed by the mayor to be its liaison, needed some help financially, and that it is a very expensive proposition in spite of all the good work done by the volunteers. And I don't know how they would do it without the volunteers, but it is a very expensive proposition. And Commissioner Fish downplays his role in creating the opportunity to use the McCall's building. It was a park's property, and without not only his cooperation but his great idea to allow the Rose Festival to use that, we couldn't use it. So I want to publicly acknowledge he wasn't just a supporter, but he initiated the trade of properties that allowed this to happen. And one of the things I've always been blessed with is forgetting controversy real quick after we achieve a goal. So all I know is that we've acquired the property for the Rose Festival, and the council supported putting a beautiful representation of the Rose Festival adjacent to it that is for all to see 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, so that if Portland's living room is Pioneer Courthouse Square, Portland's front yard is the new Rose Festival building on the waterfront, and that from this point forward, it will always be recognized as such, as a source of great pride to all of us here on the council, and I know to all of you who work so hard for the Rose Festival. But I also need to point out that as I've said to people many, many times, having served here under three mayors now, and for I'm in my eighth year of being on the council, that nothing that each individual council member does is possible without the support and cooperation of the mayor. And I've had it both ways, believe me. I know the distinction between not being supported and cooperated with and being supported and cooperated with, as I am by Mayor Adams. So the work I've done has been at the behest of Mayor Adams and with his unqualified support, none of which we've been able to do together would have been possible without his support. I was happy to hear his announcement today on including in the mayor's budget not having the Rose Festival pay fees. Having said that, we do need to address the concern that Commissioner Fritz and Fish have addressed about reimbursing the Parks Bureau for those costs. I would not want to take such an action without doing that, and I absolutely want to acknowledge that. But having said that, this is an important event for all Portlanders. There are other young Vicatias out there and young Randys who are going to walk to the Rose Festival. And we don't want to inspire them years later to erupt some kind of controversy if things go awry from their childhood memory, as it did for me. So I want to do my best to do the proper thing always in my partnership with Jeff and the Rose Festival, and I think we have, and I'm really appreciative of the council and its support, and certainly of the Rose Festival and all of its good work. And I too want to acknowledge Governor Attia being here, and thank you for your kind words on behalf of the festival. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for taking on the task of being the liaison. Traditionally, it's been with the mayor's office, but given the recession, given our deficits in academic performance, and we have to put together a new 25-year plan for the city, his willingness and enthusiasm to take this on, and I'm very happy to back you up on this task, has allowed me to focus on other things that we need to focus on as a city. I'm a huge supporter of this festival, in part because I grew up in Newport, Oregon, and we had the annual Lincoln County Fair. And so I cannot imagine a city without an official annual gathering to have fun and to sort of express itself in the way that it chooses to. So I also see the fact that in its 103rd year, it brings to the local economy about $50 million, 2 million visitors on average to the festival. So it's also a good business proposition. When I took over as mayor and I saw the books and how much we charge the festival, I was embarrassed because I thought it was unfair. And so the fact that this will be the official festival of the city of Portland, which most people probably thought it always had been, means that it does get special treatment. And with that comes new and special responsibility. And I really like the fact your sort of co-commitment to both maintain the traditions, which are really important, to remember sort of where we've come from and what we've lived through together as a community, and that should inspire us for what's possible into the future. But also today, I really like your co-commitment to work at making sure that this festival has a piece of it that's always evolving and that is as relevant as possible, that it is as hip and cool a piece of it as anything else out there, and that your commitment to do both, I think, is really important. And I know there are debates inside the festival sort of over the tension of that, and I really hope that you will see that not as competitive, but as actually vital to the festival's future. I also have learned a very valuable political lesson, and that is to fight for position in the Grand Floral Parade behind the Pooper Scooper clowns. Because with the exception of the Royal Rosarians, they probably get the biggest clap, the biggest audience response. And if you walk close enough, people think they're clapping at you. It's really great. Thanks to the corporate sponsors that Jeff mentioned, absolutely key to this. I want to, of course, thank Jeff and Robert and Marilyn for and the entire team of the Rose Festival, Sue and all the Royal Rosarians, I always get them wrong, the Royal Order of the Roses, the Rose Society. Rose Society, thank you. Rose Society, I mean, it's just such a great partnership, and I look forward to working with you to keep the Rose Festival the great tradition that it is. So thank you. Aye. You're official.
Politician's nightmare.
This is a politician's nightmare. Council has additional work, but we'll be taking a 5-minute recess to say hello personally, and if we need to get you all out into the hall.
Great job. Thank you so much for the support.
Yeah. Good job.
Oh, how are you?
We appreciate your support.
Oh, God, yeah. We should have done it. We should have done it when you were director.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Yeah. Yeah. How's life?
Things are going well. I'm out at St. Vincent now.
Okay.
Just love working for
Bob. Good. They're a good group. Well, I'm really glad you were here, and I love the time.
Thank you.
Very good.
Take care.
I dig. All right. The Portland City Council will come back to order. We have a 9:30 time certain. And item number 60. Carla, would you please read the title for time certain, item number 60.
Mm-hmm. Accept report of the Customer Service Advisory Committee.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. And it's appropriate that we ceded to the Rose Festival to go first, because that's part of what we do as city employees, is make sure that our partners are taken care of. And I appreciate that. And I also want to mention that the previous item was important for the reasons stated, and it's important for us to celebrate good things and make sure that we do them right. And it's not an either-or thing. That I'm sure that with some people, that when people are looking for controversy in the previous statement, they're going to say, well, why are we wasting our time on things like that? And the fact of the matter is, it wasn't a waste of time. It was a very important investment of time, and so that people know about our Rose Festival. And it's not a case of either doing that or something else. We can do both. And one of the things that we do is work on providing excellent customer service and constituent services to all of our partners, whether within the city of Portland or out in the community. And so I'm happy today to introduce John Dutt, the chair of this Customer Service Advisory Committee, who's going to give the second annual report on the work of the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and well said. I did feel the need to acknowledge that I was standing there watching the presentation, seriously reconsidering the strategic consequences of letting the Rose Festival go first. But, that was.
Do you have singers? Do you have a band?
No, but I'd love a red nose. We've got extras.
It's definitely a hard act to follow, but you know the.
Thank you.
Can you imagine if we'd put that on?
Hard act to follow with the Queen and the Governor and all the dignitaries. And for me, probably the biggest thing is Mike Donahue and his voice. So,
I agree.
But we'll do our best here. And we do have something to talk about that I think is just as important, and that is customer service and the importance that that is to what we do as a city. So with that, we'll kick this off. Good morning. My name is John Dutt, and I'm here today representing the Citywide Customer Service Advisory Committee as its current chairperson. Today, we are here to present our second annual city customer service status report. This report covers the activities of city bureaus for the fiscal year 2008-2009. The committee would first of all like to thank City Council for their support, as well as our bureau directors for their support by allowing our participation in the important work that this committee does of helping facilitate a greater commitment to improving customer service across the city. Our committee is primarily a volunteer staff committee with no budget, except for a small amount to fund a few hours of administrative support provided by one of the city auditor staff. We do recognize the donation of our time and that this time could be spent performing the work of the bureaus in another capacity. As a quick matter of review, the Customer Service Advisory Committee was formed the end of 2006 as the result of a council resolution adopting the recommendations of Mayor Potter's Bureau Innovation Project No. 7. Bureau Innovation Project No. 7 had as its goal to develop recommendations for improving customer service citywide. One of the key recommendations from that was to form an advisory committee to help usher through the recommendations of Bureau Innovation Project 7. Since our formation approximately 3 years ago, the committee has spent the bulk of our time working with bureaus, serving as a resource to assist them as they work to implement the recommendations that came out of that committee. Before we get into our presentation, I'd like to recognize the individual members of the committee for their service. So I ask that any committee members here please stand as I read their names. We have Art Alexander from the Bureau of Technology Services, Stacy Brewster from Commissioner Saltzman's office, Michael Denner from Local 483, Mark Fetters from the Bureau of Development Services, Scott Fisher from the Fire Bureau, George Hawker from Commissioner Fish's office, Michael Kaplan, who's currently our only community member on the committee, Carrie Lathers from the Revenue Bureau, Michael Mills, our ombudsman, Carol Stalky from Local 189, Amy Stevens from the Mayor's Office, Leanne Tambaga from the Water Bureau, Vincent Woods from Human Resources, Maureen Yandel from the Bureau of Transportation, and then Jenny Scott is the auditor staff person that helps us out with some of the administrative functions. So with that, I'd like to turn things over to Amy Stevens and Vincent Woods to speak to a few important themes relating to customer service efforts and the work of the committee before I finish off our presentation by reviewing the report briefly and offering a few thoughts about the future of the committee and citywide efforts to improve customer service.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, commissioners. I'm Amy Stevens. I'm Mayor Adams' public advocate and a member of the city's Customer Service Advisory Committee. I'm the first of three city employees here today to acknowledge your support of the Customer Service Initiative. Before I even began my first day of work with Mayor Adams, I received a 17-page report from the committee. I read it and remember thinking, oh my word, it took 17 pages to say simply, be nice. But then I got down to the nitty-gritty of the committee's work and I came to realize that there's nothing simple about this undertaking. It's huge. The city provides an enormous variety of services to a wide array of customers, both internal and external. Being nice really is just the first step in delivering superior customer service. I was reminded, too, that everyone has a slightly different perception on what it means to be nice. Instilling a mindset of excellent customer service and codifying the parameters of what that looks like give city employees the tools we need to serve our customers well, which is what we want to do. We're excited about what the committee has accomplished and the bureaus to date, and we look forward to another year of advancement and your continued support. Thank you for listening, and please let me introduce my colleague, Vincent Woods.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Vincent Woods. I'm one of the original members of the committee, and again, would like to thank your continued support and for your time today. During this period of fiscal uncertainty and the important budget decisions to be made, the committee asked the Council to recognize the efforts our employees made to deliver the quality service to our citizens and to the importance of continuing to serve as we move forward and as you make your tough choices. We just like to have you recognize that we know and that you understand that the service that we provide today is our most important product. I'll give this back to John.
All right. As stated earlier, the Customer Service Advisory Committee has, since its inception, emphasized its role as a resource, but it also our duty to provide regular reports as to how well the city is progressing in its efforts to improve customer service. In working with the bureaus, we focused our efforts in three sort of key areas. The first being to create a culture of customer service within the bureaus. Number two, to solicit feedback from our customers. And number three, to increase the customer service skills of our workforce. It is these three key areas that we have looked at the activities of the bureaus and are reporting on today. It is also very important to note that our committee is not today reporting on how well the city or any bureau in particular provides customer service, but rather we are reporting on what efforts are being put forth in the key areas we have identified to improve customers' experience when interacting with the city. So, on to the report. The report in front of you is 25 pages in length. We took it up a notch from last year, Amy pointed out. It includes a summary for each city bureau. So obviously in the next couple minutes, I'm not going to cover much of what's in there, but we did want to review a few of the highlights to give you a sense of the breadth of activities that are going on across the city. The full report, as well as a toolkit of key examples that we use to capture and share some of the best practices going on across the city, can be found on our website, which is portlandonline.com/CSAC. As far as the format of the report in front of you, the first two pages is an executive summary, just lays out a little bit of the history, some of the activity highlights, and a summary of findings. This is followed by the bulk of the report, which is the individual bureau updates. And then the final page is an updated scorecard that provides a visual representation of the content of the 23 pages of bureau updates. On to the highlights. The first key focus area, as I mentioned, is creating a culture of customer service. A handful of bureaus have gone through very comprehensive strategic planning processes recently and have done a wonderful job of incorporating customer service as a key component. Among those bureaus is the Water Bureau, the Parks Bureau, and the Revenue Bureau. We have also had a number of bureaus that have recently gone through extensive restructuring processes that have given them the opportunity to take a fresh look at what they do and how they do it. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Housing Bureau are two of these that have demonstrated that customer service is a high priority for them as they go through this planning processes. Our second key improvement focus area is soliciting feedback from customers. We've probably seen the most activity in this area over the past couple of years citywide. There have been several brand new customer surveys that have been devised that we feel are very effective, notably by Parks and Recreation, the Portland Development Commission, the Water Bureau, the Bureau of Technology Services, and the Audit Services Division of the City Auditor's Office. We've also seen some bureaus that already had tools in place, but have enhanced and updated those tools based on recommendations of our committee. These include the Office of Management and Finance, the City Attorney's Office, and the Revenue Bureau. We've also had some recent conversations with the Office of Emergency Management as they've been in the process of implementing a customer survey, again, based on the Customer Service Advisory Committee surveying guidelines. One other thing that I think is important to acknowledge when we talk about customers is all of us also have a lot of internal customers, and many bureaus have acknowledged this by conducting staff surveys to get feedback internally on how well we are doing working with each other. A few good examples of bureaus that have used these types of tools are Parks and Recreation, Bureau of Transportation, Bureau of Environmental Services, and the Bureau of Emergency Communications. A few highlights from the third improvement focus area, which is workforce development, include the fact that several bureaus have been working with their staff to develop performance appraisals and quality assurance programs which incorporate customer service skill development. Both the Bureau of Development Services and the Revenue Bureau have worked through their labor management committees to develop performance review programs that include a strong customer service component. The Bureau of Emergency Communications and the Revenue Bureau are among the bureaus that have launched new or revised quality assurance programs to assist staff in developing customer service skills. Another interesting program is one that has been implemented by the Housing Bureau, where they solicit input from contractors that they work with through an online survey as part of the performance review process for their staff. Training budgets have recently been quite tight across the city, but a couple of bureaus, notably the Water Bureau and the Revenue Bureau, have successfully developed and expanded in-house training programs to place greater emphasis on customer service skill development. The Bureau of Development Services, Parks and Recreation, and the Auditor's Office have also provided some targeted customer service training for staff during the period that we reviewed. In summary, overall, the Customer Service Advisory Committee is encouraged to see the progress that's been made over the past couple of years. We plan to continue the work that we've been doing with the bureaus, and having now worked with bureau staff for the past couple of years, it seems most bureaus are progressing along and have a pretty good handle on what we're trying to accomplish. Because of this, the committee has discussed the possibility of changing to do a every two-year report instead of an annual report in order to spend more of our time promoting good customer service efforts throughout the city. The committee has also recently discussed that we've been functioning without much guidance from council since our inception about 3 years ago, so we wanted to take this opportunity to extend an open invitation to all of you to let us know your thoughts about the committee and how it's functioning, or how you think we might better achieve our goal of improving the quality of customer service across the city. In conclusion, this report shows that there is a lot of good work going on to help improve customer service. However, the committee also has to acknowledge that there are limits to these improvements given our current service delivery system. The current system is very fragmented with dozens of different individual systems in place for how city services are delivered. In order to take the next big step forward in service delivery and improving customer service, the city will likely need to undertake a very comprehensive look citywide at how we deliver services and how we can do this in a more efficient and effective manner. In the meantime, we do encourage bureaus to continue to place an increasing emphasis on providing quality customer service within their individual service delivery systems. Thank you very much for your time, and if you have any questions or comments, we'd be happy to hear them.
I have a question. I find the narrative portion of this very useful, but I think what's harder to discern in this report is a clear sense, for me reading it, where are the areas that really need tightening up? And I know your job is not to ding any particular office, but is there some way that this could be converted to like a report card? And also, is there some way to standardize some of the information more? And I'll give you one example. There are occasional, depending on the bureaus, there are sometimes references to the auditor's SEA report, but not consistently throughout. And it seems to me that is a pretty good benchmark. We have the auditor survey. We have whatever surveys we do in our different formats. And likewise, around workforce development and training, there's a whole host of resources that I'm learning are available to us that aren't necessarily budget busters. For example, there's nothing that prevents us from asking HR to give training on cultural competency to our employees and to do an annual refresher. And my guess is that given the state of the law in Title VII, for example, that it's good practice to have every office every year go through a refresher on do's and don'ts in the workplace. That's just a prudent thing to do. So I guess my comment is there's a lot of good stuff in here, but what would be I'm interested in knowing how does this get translated into some action plan to bureau directors around areas of need of improvement with specific concrete examples. Or is that part of your charge? Or are we to take this information and do that sort of ourselves? And that's a question.
Sure. I guess a couple things just to address that. One is the last page of the report is the scorecard, which is sort of our visual way of showing sort of how we're doing. And it's based on sort of a consumer reports model where we used a full circle, which means that the bureau in that area has that's something that they do. They've completed or it's an ongoing practice. A half circle meaning something that they're working on, and the open circle meaning, as far as we know, something that they haven't really gotten into or completed yet. As far as the way that we've worked as a committee is we've broken our committee into what we call site teams. So it's kind of based on HR's model where they have a staff that work with certain bureaus. And we've concentrated our efforts on working through those site teams with individual bureaus as they're working on some of this stuff to be a resource and to have conversation with them and encourage them to do certain things certain ways. Because there are some very specific recommendations that came out of BIP 7. Probably the best example is there was a surveying guideline that came out about how to identify what kind of customers you're dealing with and what are the sort of questions to ask to get meaningful input. And there's some fairly formal documents on that. And we have, in working with the bureaus, some of the bureaus, as I mentioned in the report, have developed surveys based on a lot of that recommendation or even modified existing surveys they had to incorporate more of that. So, right now it's been primarily, it's a volunteer staff committee, the people that have their jobs. So we've, focused our efforts on working specifically with bureaus individually, realizing they have different customer groups and trying to help them figure out how to do some of these things specific to what services they deliver. So,
So one of my takeaways is if a commissioner in charge wanted to have a meeting on this on these issues with leadership from a bureau, we could conceivably invite the site team that was working on it to sit in and to help us sort of collect, and as a group, come up with some clear goals for the year. And looking at those half circles or areas where you still, even if there's a full circle, there's clearly room for improvement, kind of map out where we might want to head.
Mm-hmm. I think we might have a connect the dot issue here. Are you working with OMF on the service improvement plans that each bureau is required to turn in as part of the budget?
No.
I didn't know you all existed, continued to exist. So, and my public advocate has been working on it. So I need you to, every bureau is required to turn in three service improvement goals for the year. Mm-hmm. And so we need you to caucus. I see a really strong opportunity or an opportunity to sort of coalesce and strengthen the efforts. I'm really pleased it's hard to judge whether we're doing a good job of improving our services unless there's some sort of operationally appropriate surveying going on. So you've made great strides in the last year on getting folks to do some sort of surveying, so that's great. But let's connect the dots between what you're doing and the work in the Bureau of Financial Planning.
Yeah, and I was aware of that work, but no, we haven't connected with that. One kind of related committee is the Public Involvement Standards Committee that we have connected quite a bit with, because a lot of what they're trying to do ties in with what we do, because a lot of customer service efforts that the bureaus do is outreach to the community to get input on projects and things like that. So there's a lot of synergy there. So I came and spoke to their committee at one point to tell them what we were doing and just kind of talk about that. Because one of the things we've asked some of the bureaus that have indicated to us that they do the community outreach work and that they have surveys and things to evaluate that work is to get more information from them about how well those efforts are working as a way of evaluating customer service as well. So,
Mayor, if I could just make one other observation. You know, as we continue to grow as a city, one of the things that I'm increasingly faced with as Parks Commissioner is managing user conflicts. But I suspect that each of us have our version of user conflicts. And what makes user conflict particularly challenging these days is the extent to which we partner with other governments. So a user conflict where it's the city and county that have some responsibility or the school district in the city. And if this report raises good points about how we can do our job better, but our job becomes exponentially harder when we're partnering with another jurisdiction that whose standards for, let's say, public engagement, what is it, number 9 under the guidelines, are different than ours, and we start going haywire, and I'm running into this all the time. So in addition to thinking about our service standards, I would certainly appreciate some advice down the road about how we can help our partners do a better job. Because as I've learned, if we partner with someone and they don't do a very good job of, let's say, public process, the tab often comes due on our dime, and it doesn't make our job any easier.
Whether I mentioned it to Bureau of Financial Planning as well, so I'd really like you to combine efforts with them, or at least come back with a proposal for us to consider, and then also think ahead in terms of SAP and the tools provided to bureaus to integrate the tracking and the reminder on these kinds of things, not just surveying, but everything else you're talking about. Look at when SAP is fully implemented in 18 months, the core, there are many components you can add to the core system. So I'd ask you to sort of think ahead on that. These efforts can become a lot easier for bureaus once we get SAP in place.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about a little bit last year when we presented and really go into it much detail here, though, was, you know, the fact that the city does have a bunch of different service delivery systems. And so it's a lot of cities have undertaken looking at going to a centralized customer management system, to help to improve efficiencies and streamline things. So that's a whole nother conversation, and I know.
Well, the great thing about SAP is I wouldn't, John, ever use the word centralized, because you'll immediately get quiet resistance in the bureaucracy like you've never seen before. But the great thing about SAP is it can be decentralized but systemic and systematized. So recognizing that different bureaus need to employ different kinds of tactics and strategies around constant customer improvement, SAP, when I've seen what other private sector and other public entities have adopted SAP, there's some great customer service improvement add-ons that we can procure if you all think it's worth the investment.
And for those watching at home, SAP is our new computer system. And I wanted also to clarify, when you talk about a central citywide customer management system, are you talking about a 311 type system with one phone number to call no matter what your concern is?
Potentially it could include that. I mean, there are systems that don't necessarily require it. I mean, that's sort of the back end. The customer management system is the database that manages customers' requests for services and manages those throughout the process and gives them feedback and all that. So that's sort of the back end. But a lot of times there is a phone number, because a lot of people like to call in to request services associated with the database.
Just again to explain to folks why we're not just rushing to do that right now. It costs several million dollars to get all the software and do all the reorganization that eventually we think that it will be cost effective and that we'll be able to provide better service for the same amount of money. But to set it up is a significant expenditure, which we aren't able to do during these challenging times. But we haven't forgotten about it, so I'm glad that you're reminding us.
Any other discussion? Thank you very much, and thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Now that I know of it, I think it's great.
I move we accept the report.
We meet on the second Monday of every month at noon, so come on by.
I expect to see you there.
I will. I'm sure I will be well represented. Has anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Okay, the report has been motioned for approval, seconded. Please call the roll. Vote. Please call the vote.
Fritz?
Well, thank you very much for your work on this, and please thank the committee members, because as you noted, it is taking time out of their regular assignment to be able to work on this committee. And I want to thank Mayor Potter for initiating the work, and for Mayor Adams, now that he knows about it, for connecting the dots and adding value to it. And I'm sure there's so many things that our mayor is juggling that I'm sure that your staff has told you about it. And that's why it's helpful that you're bringing this report to us. So you had mentioned whether you should go to a biannual report. I know that it takes a lot of time to compile something like this. I find it extraordinarily useful. I think that coming every year is very valuable. As Commissioner Fish noted, I appreciate the scorecard. And I challenge my fellow council members to each work on our own offices and on our bureaus.
Yeah, I was noticing that.
Noticing that Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Leonard have more dots than I do, more black dots. So
I wasn't going to mention that.
Well, I thought I would commend you. Noting that it's fiscal year. So for instance, our strategic plan we did in the second half of the year, having finally realized what it was that citizens wanted us to do. Or continue to develop that. I appreciate the paragraphs, too, and I, again, want to commend Commissioner Fish for the Housing Bureau. I liked that in particular because it noted a particular problem and how it's being addressed, and I think that that's more meaningful to me than just general, yes, we want to provide good customer service. I want to ask you to expand the way you're thinking about this and ask us all to expand the way that we're thinking about this, because citizens are not just customers. Before I became an elected official and responsible for some of this, I was in the Parks Bureau. I was a customer when I bought swim classes for my children. I was a donor when I pull IV and donate my time or when I give money to the Parks Foundation. I'm a partner when I participate in policy discussions and when I act as an advisor to the Parks Bureau. And I'm an owner as a taxpayer who supports public properties. So to limit our thinking to customer service, I think, does a disservice to all of our constituents who want to be, and I want them to be part of our government. The government is us rather than us and them, that we provide the service and they pay for services. I think we all do more than that. And so if we expand the thinking of how we provide customer service, I think that might affect the assessment tool too, because it's not necessarily only a survey. It's a matter of did the citizen feel heard, even if they didn't get what they wanted in a policy discussion, for example. I find this very, very helpful, and I'm going to link the report from the front page of my website, so that if citizens would like to easily find it, I will make sure that it's there, and then I'll put it available on the What Happened page. So thank you very much for all your diligent work. I'm excited about this, and I think it is part of our continuing improvement, which we are succeeding in, and that's another thing that's good about this report, is that in many ways we are providing better customer service and better donor service and partnerships and ownership services for our constituents, which will help all Portlanders engage in their government. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you for your work, and timing could not be better, since we're starting a series of retreats with our bureau teams to talk about goals for the next year and where we need to tighten things up. So this is very helpful for me as commissioner in charge. So thank you, and I look forward to figuring out a way, as the mayor said, to link this with the service improvement plans that we've been called upon to do, and then have a more systematized way of tracking progress. And frankly, tracking progress, to pick up on Amanda's point, is not necessarily just implementing the system. It's actually changing the way people go about doing the work. And anyway, I appreciate your good work. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I just want to join the growing chorus of accolades towards Mayor Adams for finally connecting the dots. Aye.
Adams.
Dot connector in chief. Thank you for your work. Look forward to helping to bring it together with connecting the dots. And I'm just going to vote aye. I have a pre-excused absence, so El Presidente will take over. Luck with this.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a debut speech I'd like to put into the record.
Wow.
I'm so sorry to leave.
Commissioner needs to take a break.
It starts with Ebenezer Leonard and Josiah Fish and their work at Bunker Hill, and it takes us forward to this.
Nice.
Anyway.
oh, wow.
So we'll then move to the regular agenda. Carla, will you please call item number 86.
Authorize additional revenue bonds for urban renewal areas.
Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you. He's hobbling a little bit this morning, but doing pretty well under the circumstances. Good morning. I'm Eric Johansson, the city's debt manager. The ordinance before you this morning authorizes an increase in the amount of bonds that may be issued for three of the city's 11 urban renewal areas. As you may recall, most of the urban renewal projects that are funded by PDC are initially funded through lines of credit or overnight financing. These lines of credit are established with commercial banks, and projects are funded on those lines of credit until such time as we accumulate enough balance and when market conditions are right, at which time we roll the balance of the lines of credit into long-term debt. So this is in the natural progression of an urban rural area. Projects are funded typically through a line of credit initially and then ultimately rolled out into long-term debt. But in three of the city's urban renewal areas right now, Central East Side, Interstate Corridor, and Gateway, we're now the balance on the lines of credit for those districts are now no longer sufficient to pay the anticipated projects that are expected to occur through the rest of this calendar year. So we're here today to ask for an increase in the lines of credit for those three districts so that they can continue to do the projects that are anticipated to be funded through the remainder of calendar year 2010.
Keith, do you have something to add to this?
No, I was just here if there were questions.
Okay. Questions from my colleagues?
So, and I appreciate getting the briefing on this, and I'm going to ask some questions just so I think citizens want to know more about what we're doing here, since it increases the indebtedness by $28 million. Is that correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So are there other urban renewal areas that are being reduced in indebtedness?
What's happened is that we have reached the maximum indebtedness amount or expiration date on three of other districts right now, so they no longer have borrowing needs in those districts. So we formally haven't reduced the capacity of those districts. They just don't have any legal authority to borrow any more money. So we're still within the overall limit that we've established with the banks. We're still under that limit, even with this increase, because the other districts no longer have a need.
Okay. And then how did you decide how much to add to each of the other districts, the three that are getting more?
Yeah, I can take that. My understanding is, well, the way that we approach this is look at the anticipated projects that are coming up over the next couple of years. A portion of those projects are going to be funded with sort of pay-as-you-go financing, or what we call de jure indebtedness, where we go out and borrow overnight and then free up that money to be used for projects. So a portion of projects get funded in that manner. However, that's usually not sufficient to pay for all of the project needs, so that's when we go out and request an additional amount for the individual districts. So this is a case of looking at the individual projects in these three districts, forecasting out how much needs to be spent over the next year, and then requesting an increase to accommodate those projects.
And the council voted to increase the maximum indebtedness of the Central East Side District in 2006?
Correct.
And that was $51 million. Is this on top of that?
Well, I want to make... So this, we're not increasing indebtedness in any of the districts. It's as if, I think when we were briefing you, Commissioner, we're kind of looking at it as expanding the borrowing options. So what we're doing is, you know, if you have a home and you took out a line of credit 5 years ago and you could get $100,000 and you look at the projects you might do, what we're doing today is basically saying, can we increase the line of credit further? Because we actually have some projects we're going to get done, but it's not digging into or increasing maximum indebtedness, but it will be, it's a borrowing mechanism, so you do incur debt. You know, if you put $6 million into the streetcar that you didn't put in yesterday, that's $6 million in debt that you have to pay back. And I think with the action that's being taken today, it gives the city the option to pay that debt back through a line of credit in the short term.
And it says in the ordinance that we're borrowing it without causing taxes to rise.
Sorry, without what?
Doesn't increase the taxes for citywide property taxpayers?
That is correct. It's a very long explanation, but these districts receive whatever tax increment revenues are generated by those districts. So this action in and of itself does not increase taxes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, this is an ordinance, so it goes to a second reading. Thank you both. Carla, will you please read Council Item 87, and it's a second reading.
Roll call on 87?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, do you have to read it first?
That's the one we just did, and it is this is its second reading, so we should be voting on it.
On 87?
On 87,
yeah.
Yes.
So would you please read the item?
Okay. I'm sorry.
You need to read it.
I got it. 87, authorized sewer revenue bonds to finance additions and improvements to the sewer system.
This is a vote only. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
87 is adopted. Could you please read Council Item 88?
Authorized the Director of the Bureau of Environmental Services to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Lake Oswego to work cooperatively to improve habitat for native species in the Tryon Creek Confluence Area, project number E08958.
Commissioner Saltzman is homesick, no doubt watching us on TV, so his office has asked me to read a very brief introductory statement. Thank you, Mayor.
Wow.
How did I do so far? These two ordinances both pertain to Tryon Creek Confluence Habitat Enhancement Project, say that three times, which includes enhancing about 900 feet of Tryon Creek at its confluence with the Willamette River in Lake Oswego. In 2007, the City Council authorized an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation for the first phase of this project, which includes modifying a culvert under Highway 43 to improve fish passage into the Tryon Creek State Natural Area. Ordinance 88 authorizes an IGA with the City of Lake Oswego in order to complete the second and final phase of this project. Ordinance 89 authorizes a contract with the lowest responsible bidder to construct the project, and the estimated construction cost is $474,000. The work includes improving in-stream and stream bank habitat for salmon, steelhead, and other native species, improving floodplain connectivity, and removing invasive vegetation and establishing native plant communities. Work on the project will start this summer. Kristen Acock and Scott Gibson from BES are here to show us a couple of slides of the project design and to answer any questions the council may have. Welcome.
Did you want me to read 89 also?
Sure.
89, authorize a contract with the lowest responsible bidder for the construction of the Tryon Creek Confluence Habitat Enhancement Project, number E08958.
Thank you. Kristen and Scott?
All right, thank you. Thank you for having us this morning. This slide is an overview of the project site and the immediate vicinity. The project is located about half a mile or less north of downtown Lake Oswego on Tryon Creek. The white call-out bubbles here on this slide show the general activities associated with the construction of this project and the location of the Phase 1 project that ODOT did with the culvert retrofit in 2008 that Commissioner Fish mentioned. Tryon Creek is about 7 miles long with its headwaters in near Multnomah Village in southwest Portland. And although the upper three quarters of the watershed is in the city of Portland, the lower quarter is outside of the city limits, and the project itself is in the city of Lake Oswego at the confluence with the Willamette River. Tryon Creek is home at various times of the year to several native fish species, including coho, chinook, and steelhead, all of which are federally listed as endangered, as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. It's also home to cutthroat and lamprey, which are candidate species or species of concern. Our project is outlined in red here on this slide, our project site. This is a 6.5-acre property owned publicly by City of Portland, City of Lake Oswego, and Metro. It was purchased in 2003. Our project, the enhancement project, will take place on about 4 of these 6.5 acres. And just upstream across Highway 43 is the 645-acre Tryon Creek State Natural Area forested park that I'm sure you're familiar with. The project is aligned with all 4 of the watershed health goals in the Portland Watershed Management Plan: hydrology improvements, water quality, physical habitat, and biological communities. And it also follows the city's commitment to salmon recovery. In June of 2000, Council declared its intent to create a recovery plan for salmon and trout listed under the Endangered Species Act. The Commissioner Fish has already talked about the objectives of the project. This slide shows kind of a before and after. The photograph on the right is the existing conditions with the creek channelized. Riprap or large rock was placed by a previous owner to keep the creek in its place and to enable the owner to fill a bit on the banks. The banks are about 15 to 40 feet high, so there's functionally no floodplain, nowhere for the water to go when the water gets high. It just rushes through and scours out. After the construction of the project, there's a sketch on the lower left that shows we'll excavate out a floodplain bench where it's feasible. We'll place about 100 pieces of large wood, boulders, cobble, gravels, and revegetation of about 3.5 acres after removing invasive plants. Our overarching goal is improving rearing, refuge, and spawning habitat for salmonids and native fish and to enhance the native upland habitat. As you can see, we have had a lot of partners on this project, and some of the partners providing funds through grants, our CIP fund. We've had partners providing volunteer services. ODOT did the work on Phase 1 with their own maintenance crews. We've got partners that are doing fish studies, and so we really appreciate the partnerships we've had and the work they've done, and we appreciate the support of our council. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. Questions from my colleagues?
So I noted that the cost that we're voting on is $474,000. Is that the total cost of the project?
That's the construction contract.
So I'm curious, and I appreciate that the headwaters are in Portland, but the confluence is in Lake Oswego. Why are they not contributing to the construction of the project?
They